Welcome to Impact AI, brought to you by Pixel Scientia Labs. I'm your host, Heather Couture. On this podcast, I interview innovators and entrepreneurs about building a mission-driven, machine learning-powered company. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to my newsletter to be notified about new episodes. Plus, follow the latest research in computer vision for people and planetary health. You can sign up at pixelscientia.com/newsletter. Today, I'm joined by guest Jean-Baptiste Chiarati, Medical Imaging Group Lead and Lead Research Scientist at Owkin, to talk about drug development and diagnostics using self-supervised learning. Jean-Baptiste, welcome to the show.
Welcome, and thank you for having me, Heather.
Jean-Baptiste, could you share a bit about your background and how that led you to Owkin?
Sure. So I have an academic training in applied mathematics. I've received my PhD degree from University Paris-Saclay in Paris. It was prepared both at École Polytechnique, Brain and Spine Institute in a Paris hospital. During this PhD, I developed statistical methods to model the spatial temporal progression of neurodegenerative diseases, such as Alzheimer's disease. And shortly after my PhD, I did a postdoc at Telecom Paritech, so French engineering school, and worked on automatic detection of epileptic seizures from EEG recordings. And shortly after this postdoc, in September 2019, I joined Owkin. So I joined Owkin first as a data scientist in a team that was called the radiology team. And beginning of 2021, the radiology team was merged with the histology team into a new team called the medical imaging group. And this is the moment when I was given the opportunity to co-lead this R&D team, and I still occupy this position.
So what does Owkin do, and why is this important for healthcare?
So Owkin is a tech bio that uses artificial intelligence to accelerate precision health by discovering and developing new drugs. And we recently reached the unicorn status, and we were also named to the World Economics Forum's unicorn community, working in the Forum Center for Health and Healthcare. So Owkin was founded in 2016 with the mission to understand complex biology through AI. And so to do this, we identify precision therapeutics, de-risk and accelerate clinical trials, and develop diagnostics using AI trained on world-class patient data through privacy-enhancing federated technologies. So all this to finally say that it allows us to provide healthcare professionals with cutting-edge tools that they need to improve patient care and provide the right treatments to the patients.
In reading a number of papers published by Owkin, a common approach they've seen you use is self-supervised learning. For the audience who may not be familiar, what is self-supervised learning and when is it useful?
So I've put up a definition. So I would say that self-supervised learning refers to a set of machine learning methods and algorithms that can be used to learn powerful representations from unlabeled data. That's my definition, but you may come across other definitions. And so in self-supervised learning, an AI model uses what is called a pretext task. There are different pretext tasks that you can find. So for instance, a jigsaw puzzle or colorization, in order to identify patterns and learn relevant representations for what we call downstream tasks. So tasks with labeled data. So in computer vision, recently there has been like spectacular progresses on self-supervised learning, especially on the ImageNet database. And we've seen that these methods have been closing the gap with fully supervised learning. So most of the self-supervised learning method now yield quite impressive results on natural images. One of the most recent self-supervised learning methods that you may have heard of is Dino V2 from Facebook AI Research.
So what are some situations in which you might choose to use self-supervised learning instead of a fully supervised model from the beginning?
So that's a good question. And in general, self-supervised learning, at least in our experience at Owkin, self-supervised learning provides generally more robust and more generalizable representations than fully supervised learning. So with fully supervised learning on labeled data, an AI model will be able to learn representations, but it's likely that those representations will be generalizable to other downstream tasks. Whereas with self-supervised learning, we've seen that we can actually learn powerful representations from unlabeled data. And usually, if the model is trained on a lot of data, those representations generalize well to a variety of downstream tasks. So it means that we have a wide or large set of downstream tasks, then those representations usually provide, with, say, linear probing, good performances for almost all those downstream tasks.
What does it take to train one of these self-supervised models for pathology?
So it takes both, obviously, compute and data. So as we said, so the data does not need to be labeled. And it's also important to note that most of self-supervised learning algorithms, such as DynoV2 or iBot, are usually quite computationally intensive. So they usually require a lot of compute because usually they require quite large batch sizes. And so in the end, to be able to train a computer vision backbone using self-supervised learning methods, you usually need to have a lot of unlabeled data, but also a lot of GPUs. I'll talk a bit later about that if you want, but yes, usually we need to have both a lot of unlabeled data and a lot of GPUs.
Are you able to put some numbers on some of this? So for example, some of the self-supervised model that you've trained at Oak, and how long did it need to train for? Or how many images did you need to use?
Yeah, sure. Your question is, I think, a good opportunity to note that in July 2023, so last year, Okin has made open source a vision transformer that was pre-trained using a self-supervised learning algorithm called iBot. So this model that we've open sourced is called FICON. This is a vision transformer based, has been pre-trained on images from the TCGA database, so the Cancer Genome Atlas database. And so to put some very specific numbers on the training of FICON, so FICON was pre-trained, so it was trained using iBot on a dataset of 40 million patches, so small regions extracted from whole slide images. It was trained on 32 GPUs, so 32 NVIDIA Tesla V100 GPUs with 32 gigabytes. So that's actually a lot of compute. It was trained for a total of 1,200 GPU hours. So that's roughly a week of training for an estimated cost of several thousand dollars.
So a ton of data, and by most scales, a ton of compute as well. I'm sure there's some companies who have this kind of compute available, but certainly not everybody does.
Yeah, that's an issue. So to be able to train efficiently computer vision backbones, you actually need to have a lot of compute, and that can be very costly, as you said.
One of the benefits of self-supervised learning that you've already mentioned is generalizability. Are there other benefits from using this type of model instead of an alternative?
So one of the main benefits is generalizability. Also, I think that in some cases, the representations or the embeddings that are learned by the model can be more interpretable or maybe easier to work with, but that depends probably on the downstream tasks. So I think that the main advantage is generalizability, yes.
And how have you used these self-supervised models? Were they used in building some of Okin's recent products?
Yes, so I've talked about FICON, so the model that Okin has made open source in July 2023. Obviously, we have other models that have been pre-trained using self-supervised learning. So some of them are currently used in two of our diagnostic tools. So one of the tool is called RelapRisk, which is a prognostic tool to help pathologists and oncologists to predict relapse in patients suffering from breast cancer. And we have another one that is called MSI Intuit, which assists pathologists in pre-screening of colorectal cancer patients with microsatellite instability. So both of these diagnostic tools developed at Okin actually rely on models that have been pre-trained using self-supervised learning.
Do they rely on the same broad model, or are there models that are more specific to a particular type of tissue?
There are some models that are indeed particular to specific types of tissue or specific subtypes of cancers. And also the models can have different architectures and different sizes. They come in different flavors.
We talked a little bit about what you need to train one of these self-supervised models, and in particular, a ton of data. Do you have any guidance on how to structure that data set? Does it really need to be diverse across all the different cancer types? Or would a smaller data set of a particular cancer type be more helpful for certain applications? Any thoughts on best practices there?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. I'm not convinced that there is one fits all answer to this question. So I mean, I'm not convinced that there is a recipe that would work in all cases. So the naive way to prepare data, and especially in the context of digital pathology, is just to take the whole slide images, detect the regions of the images which contain matter, and then just split them into patches. So then you end up with a very large data set that contains hundreds of thousands or millions of patches. And this is what you will be pre-training your model on. However, looking at recent methods like DynoV2, for instance, I think that data curation plays a crucial role in the training or pre-training with self-supervised learning. And so my personal opinion on this is that data curation is probably an important step. And regarding the preparation of the data, the more diverse the data is, the better. So the broader, I mean, the more cancer indications we have, probably the better to train an efficient model to compute embedding of pathology images.
So generally, the broader, the better, but there could be certain use cases where a different type of structure for the pre-training data might be a better choice. Is that?
Yes, exactly.
Where do you see the future of self-supervised learning? In some cases, these are called foundation models. I don't know whether you're using that term or if it's more self-supervised in terms of talking about what you're doing at Oaken. What do you think the future looks like with these models for pathology?
So as far as I'm concerned, I'm convinced that the foundation models will play a very important role in digital pathology. And I think this is already happening. So for instance, soon after we released our FICON model, so our bit-based pre-trained on different cancer indications from TCGA, I've seen some very impactful papers coming out with different foundations models for histology. So for instance, there was this UNI model and the VIRCO model also. In the past months, we've seen the development of some very large and very impactful foundations model for digital pathology. And I think this is very likely to continue in the near future. So however, as of today, most of these models are not public. And so when Oaken decided to open source FICON, I think we had a really strong and positive impact on the community because we've seen that this impact is important for people working in the field of digital pathology. That's something that is quite, how can I say it? I mean, we are glad to have open sourced this model. And also, I want to mention that recently, Oaken has won the Kaggle UBC Ocean competition thanks to this FICON model. So that's another way to showcase the impact that this model can have on the community.
I certainly agree. Open sourcing this stuff makes a dramatic difference in the field and enabling others, whether in academia or within smaller companies who don't have the resources to train massive models, but just by open sourcing it, you're able to help push the field forward. So I applaud you guys for that.
Yes, exactly.
In terms of these future models, what do you think they'll look like a year or two from now? Are they just going to be bigger or will there be other types of changes to them?
So it's likely that they're going to be bigger and bigger, also trained on more and more and more data. So for instance, the VIRCO model that was developed by PageI and Microsoft that is trained on way more data than our FICON model. So it's orders of magnitude larger. But I think also that the next frontier for foundations model is multimodality. So I'm expecting that in the near future, foundation model will have to tackle this problem of multimodality and not just be domain-specific large vision models for digital pathology, for instance. So by multimodality, I'm thinking that, for instance, combining multi-omics, like spatial transcriptomics with digital pathology and clinical data. And so I think that we can expect that in the near future, large language models could be used to integrate different data modalities at different scales. So for instance, DNA, spatial transcriptomics, or proteomics with digital pathology and clinical data. And so that's, I think, a very interesting challenge for foundations model and for large vision or large language models in the near future. Related to this, I wanted to mention that in June 2023, Oaken announced the Mosaic study. So it's a $50 million project to create the largest multi-omic spatial atlas in oncology. And so with Mosaic, Oaken will cover seven cancer indications and collect tumor samples for more than 1,000 patients per indication. And so with each tumor sample, we'll be able to generate spatial transcriptomics using, for instance, 10x Genomics Visium, also single-cell data using Chromium, bulk RNA-seq, digital pathology, clinical data, and other data types. And so eventually, I think that the developments in foundations models plus such initiatives are actually wonderful opportunities for multimodal self-supervised learning.
With that data set, it sounds like you already have plans for a multimodal foundation model in your future.
Yes, something like this, yes.
Are there any lessons you've learned in developing self-supervised approaches that could be applied more broadly to other types of imagery?
Yes, indeed. So I think some of the lessons can be generalized or can echo to other types of imagery. So for instance, I think that a lot of experiments are needed to study, for instance, the effect of data curation, the backbone architecture, and some hyperparameters on the pre-training. And I think that's true also for other types of imagery. And in particular, I'm thinking about developments in self-supervised learning for radiology data. And I think that there are a lot of ideas that are in common between what we do at Hawking in digital pathology and what other people do for 2D or 3D radiology data.
And finally, where do you see the impact of Hawking in 3 to 5 years?
I think hopefully that in 3 to 5 years, Hawking will have continued to advance tools for cancer patients and discover actionable targets in specific subtypes of cancer, hopefully. And I'm sure that Hawking will continue to benefit from advances in self-supervised learning and apply this to digital pathology. As I've said earlier, we've open sourced our FICON models, so our VIT-based model that is a pre-trained on several cancer indications from TCGN. Hopefully in the near future, we'll open source other models with the idea to help also the community.
This has been great, Jean-Baptiste. I appreciate your insights today. I think this will be valuable to many listeners. Where can people find out more about you online?
So I have a LinkedIn page as well as a Twitter page. And I usually post some news, not on a regular basis, but from time to time on my LinkedIn page. So LinkedIn, I'd say, is a good place.
I'll include a link to that in the show notes, as well as a link to Hawking's website. I believe that's Hawking.com, Hawking.com.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Heather.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'm Heather Couture, and I hope you join me again next time for Impact AI.
Thank you for listening to Impact AI. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share with a friend. And if you'd like to learn more about computer vision applications for people and planetary health, you can sign up for my newsletter at pixelscientia.com/newsletter.